These guys know sports.
Most of the time.
Bob and Chris, the voices of Boise State Athletics. Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket. This hour is brought to you by Pro-Am Sports, your full-service pro shop and bowling specialist with high-quality bowling balls, bags, shoes, and all accessories. Located right inside Westie's Garden Lanes in Garden City.
Today's show, we talk about more news events than what actually happens on the field. Baylor putting head football coach Art Briles on suspension, heading towards termination, stripping Ken Starr of one position. He's going to be just the chancellor instead of the president. And locally at Boise State, two players expelled, one player suspended from the football team for sexual assault investigation that came through the Title IX office. Very serious stories, Chris.
Yeah, none of this is fun to talk about. And the situation kind of sucks, especially the Baylor one, which is a large scale. This one more on the local level. Story in the Idaho Statesman. Dave Southern put it together in the fact that you mentioned the two players who have been expelled for Boise State. And Marquise Hendricks and Donzel Roddy. And one more suspended for a year, and Darian Jackson. Just reading through some of the details, three incidents. I won't get to the specifics. I mean, it's not pretty. You can take a look at the article in the Idaho Statesman if you want to get in-depth specifics, but three incidents. Parents of the people who are accused aren't exactly happy with how the process went. Boise State had their investigation and came up with the conclusion that those punishments were warranted. And it mentioned that not everybody on the side of the people who were accused are happy about the conclusion of what happened in the investigation. So, again, not fun. This is not why we get into sports. We don't want to have to put a serious context on how Boise State's going to do in the Mountain West and the position battles. That's the more fun thing to discuss. Mm-hmm. But I think you have to bring this kind of things up when you have college sports crossing over into a society issue, and that is sexual assault on campus. It's not just an athletic issue. I mean, Baylor, it's a big story today. And Boise State, this was a story. We thought this would be the main thing before the Baylor thing broke earlier on today. So I don't necessarily know where to go first and foremost. And it's funny because I'm spending 4 hours before the show planning out, all right, how are we going to talk about it? What are the number one things to bring to the table first and foremost? And I still don't have an exact plan because none of this is fun and none of this is smooth.
The one thing that if you read the story, and we're going to have Dave Southern on to probably, he will explain a little more what's transpired and what he has been able to report. But Boise State, the victim reports to the Title IX office. Title IX office investigates, and then the expulsions and the suspensions come down. A lot of what I've read in this story sounds like it did not happen at Baylor.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the observations that I had. And I don't know if it's something that you should pat yourself on the back about, like, wow, you followed somewhat of a procedure that seems like it makes sense from the outside. Again, report filed, investigation followed, investigation reached a conclusion, punishment issued, and that's more than you can say that about the Baylor situation that we've been talking a lot about or throughout the office you've been hearing about online. They didn't have anything set up like that. It was almost try to ignore it and pretend it didn't happen or discourage people from reporting something that happened in the first place. So I don't want to make it seem like, you know, just give somebody a cookie for taking care of their kids. That kind of an analogy, you're supposed to take care of your kids. Old Chris Rock routine, you're supposed to treat sexual assault on campus with an element of seriousness that it deserves. So on the Boise State side of things, I guess we'll see what more comes out of this. Is there more that is going to come out of this? Is Boise State going to make a statement? Will we hear from Kurt Apsey later on today on Axie AD, Idaho Sports Talk later on today? Like, those are the only things down the line that I think could add to this. But from my observation, I don't know about you, Bob, it seems like the steps of an investigation and a conclusion, like that's all taken care of. Now, from here on out, it's just reaction from head coach, people associated with the program, and we'll go from there.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else as far as what else could come from this?
I think when you just read some of these stories, the story about the hazing and the raping in eastern Idaho or southeastern mm-hmm. Idaho, it just seems like the stories are becoming more prevalent. And it every day it seems like something new gets mentioned, not just in Idaho, but across the country. And I don't know, it's very disturbing to me yeah. that, you know, this has become something that happens a lot now. You mentioned on college campuses, you could probably go to the police blotter or go looking at reports of different things that happen on a weekend in a college campus, and you'd probably have multiple ones that would happen on a given weekend.
And that's just what's reported. I mean, that doesn't even go on to what isn't reported and why sometimes victims are put in a position where they don't feel like they can report something that would happen on their campus. Again, that's what makes the Baylor thing so serious, how they wanted to put football above everything else. And we'll get a little bit more into that in the second hour of the show. But, I mean, just before the show, I'm looking at some of these stats. Mm-hmm. I mean, the stats are just ridiculous in the fact that, wait, what is it, 1 in 4 women on a college campus is a victim of sexual assault? Like, that's nuts to me. And then you think about it, and you're like, well, it's not, again, it's not just athletics, but it's mm-hmm. a lot of young male, all male groups, whether it's fraternities, whether it's clubs, whether it's sports teams. And when you come up with the mentality of the sanctity and the loyalty of the group is more sacred than the sanctity of a woman's or one person's safety on campus, you're going to have situations like this. So that's why you have to do, like, go out of your way. You have to make sure you have policies in place. And again, from the Boise State angle, it looks like they had a procedure set. From the Baylor angle, it seems like everything went wrong there. But you have to have something in place to prevent a culture from developing. And maybe it's too late to prevent that culture from arising, because it seems like across college campuses all over the country, things like this happen. So what are you going to do about it?
Let's go to the Fresh Never Frozen Domino's hotline. Ted joins us. Ted, welcome to the Bob and Chris Show.
Thank you. Listen, I don't know where to begin. You two sound like Hillary Clinton. Everybody else does it. Look all over the place and you'll find the same thing. Mm-hmm. Well, let's concentrate on Boise State. What was it, last year about this time, there was a football player dismissed because he strangled a young woman on campus? Wasn't that the case? They settled a woman that was suing either coaches and or players. Mm-hmm. They settled with her for $800,000. You've got this culture of 3 redshirt freshmen, meaning that they've already been there a year.
No. They were freshmen. They're redshirt freshmen now, not to...
Excuse me.
I'm not, it doesn't matter.
Excuse me, Bob.
Just for clarification.
Talk to the coaches that recruited these icons of high school GPAs. I mean, this is just incredible. You've got, you've got a university that was put on probation because of institutional uncontrol or whatever the heck they called it. These have all come out since that. Do you think the NCAA should know about this? You're going to interview the athletic director on the Dumb and Dumber show later on this afternoon. They're going to bring it up? I doubt it.
I mean, thanks for the call, Ted. I appreciate it. But, I mean, there are instances of sexual assault, sexual misconduct at Boise State. If you want to go back to that, I think he was referring to the David Lucero situation mm-hmm. from last year. Now, I will want to say, like, do you think that this is limited to just Boise State and Baylor? I just think, like, but from my perspective,
but that doesn't
on
make.
This,
but I think what we're saying is that doesn't make it
right,
because it's happening all over the place.
But I think at least from the Boise State angle of it, something happened and they dismissed the player. They dismissed Lucero. Something happened here and they had an investigation and they punished the people who they found did something wrong with it. Just because you don't hear of things that are going on other campuses, I'm not naive enough to think that nothing's happening at that campus. So what's worse? Things that are, the stats say sexual assault is happening on college campuses everywhere. So what's worse? You hearing nothing about it, therefore nothing's being done about it? Or you hearing something about it and hearing that something is being done about it? I mean, it isn't. If it's happening, because the stats say it's happening everywhere, you can have a culture of burying it and pretending that there's nothing to see here. Or if you hear something and see something, you can bring it to the table and do what you can to. You can't correct it because the damage is already done.
Well, I think the greatest question is, how do you prevent it from happening? And that's probably the toughest question for anybody that's an administrator at college. I mean, you have things in place of what you do after something happens, but it'd be great if you could stop it before it does.
That would be fantastic. I
don't
know
how.
That's a problem way above my head. I don't know how to solve it.
But isn't that the greatest problem? Because if you stop.
No question. No question about it. I think that's the biggest. How do you prevent this from getting to a point where we're reacting instead of preventing?
When we come back, we'll hear from Dave Southern. We'll find out what his report is in a little bit more detail. That's next on the Bob and Chris Show on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
You can be anyone you want on the Commercial Tire text line. Text us at 424-9300. Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Bob and Chris Show, Sports Radio, 93.1 FM, 1350 AM, The Ticket. Stories both at Baylor and Boise State surfacing today, and joining us to shed a little more light on the story at Boise State is Dave Southern, who last night reported that two players were expelled and one more was suspended. Dave, thank you for spending a few moments of time with us today.
My pleasure, Bob.
Well, why don't you tell us, first of all, how the story came to light to you and the kind of the facts as you see them?
Yeah, it all kind of came together pretty quickly last night. We had first heard about it yesterday evening and was able to get in touch, and we were able to obtain the documentation from the investigation, and I was able to get in touch with the parents of the three players involved, and we were able to kind of go from there. Boise State in this investigation, it took a couple months, but they determined that obviously the victims' statements were credible and decided to move forward and make a decision and act decisively.
I'm looking at some of the timelines with this, and we're joined by Dave Southern of the Idaho Statesman. And the three incidents all occurring before October 2nd. You mentioned the months that took place of the investigation. I'm just interested in what was happening during that timeline from the investigation standpoint, and the October 2nd and where we are now. That's quite a significant amount of time that's passed in between those.
Sure. The woman in the case had kind of first spoken to someone at Boise State in November and had talked a bit about what had happened, and then decided didn't name any names, and then after winter break there was another potential case that had come up and turned out to not be worthy of pursuing, but the Title IX investigator at Boise State had asked the woman if one of the names that she had been told was one of the men that she had mentioned, and she said yes. They moved forward with it then, kind of in late January, early February, and certainly with quite a few people involved, it takes a little bit of time to go through the whole process and to investigate it. And then obviously you made the decision yesterday.
Dave Southern of the Idaho Statesman joining us on the Bob and Chris Show. Dave, did the people you talked to, and it sounded like you talked to at least one of the parents of the football players at Boise State, did they give you an idea of the procedure of this, how the investigation went? Did they have a chance to present their side, how the whole thing occurred?
Yeah, you know, with part of the reason, you know, on a campus, you know, even if they don't report it to the police, which was the case in this whole scenario, was, you know, the Title IX investigator, you know, they need to figure out, you know, if there was any misconduct on the student's part, and, you know, sometimes this is actually, you know, quicker, and you know, you don't have to go to court and stuff for it. So that was, you know, sometimes that's, you know, that's how Title IX should work sometimes. And, you know, as far as the players are concerned, they were all spoken to in February. One of the players' parents told me that that his son was did about a 5-hour interview about it. Text messages between the woman and the players were part of the whole situation that were presented. The woman was able to have a couple interviews, and the players mostly were in one session, but also there were some follow-ups with that. But you know, for most of the players, they were brought in. There wasn't a parent there. They were just asked, you know, about any sort of involvement or what they knew about what they were trying to investigate.
Dave Southern with us of the Idaho Statesman, talking about the report from yesterday, late last night, with two Boise State football players expelled, another one suspended for the results of a sexual assault investigation. Now, my question is, you know, Hendricks and Roddy each expelled, and then Jackson suspended for a year. Was any reason given for why one was a suspension for a year versus the other ones being expelled?
I'm not 100% positive on that, but, you know, based on the incidents reported, there was a mention that Jackson had had physical contact, but not sexual contact with her. So that would be, you know, part of probably why he was not part of, you know, one of the two that was expelled. That was.
When did all this come down to the ruling? Did the parents give you an idea of? I mean, was it the end of the semester? I mean, was it yesterday, kind of a thing?
Yesterday. I spoke to parents of all three players, and they all said that they found out yesterday. So certainly, it was pretty fresh. And as you can see, the quote, one of the quotes was from Hendricks' father, was certainly very upset. You know, some were really upset. So, you know, some were just kind of shell shocked. Some didn't know what to do next. You know, what they could do if there was, you know, an appeals process or any sort of thing like that. But they're all still kind of sifting through that.
I mean, what do you know about the players from, I guess, an on-field standpoint? And I know this is probably the least of the major concerns coming from this, but I know from people who look at it from a football standpoint, and what is Boise State losing when a couple of players are expelled and one suspended for a year?
Sure, yeah. No, they both, you know, they both were kind of, obviously all three guys were redshirt freshmen. You saw, you know, kind of in the spring game, you know, Darian Jackson played really well, and Brian Harsin kind of pointed him out afterward as being one of the guys who took a step up in the spring. Probably could imagine that, you know, he probably wouldn't be a starting candidate, but he could be a guy that would have factored in the defensive back rotation. And same thing with Dontell Roddy, the corner. You know, certainly that's a position where, you know, graduating a guy like Dante Dion, where they could, you know, and they play a couple guys in there. And when I was watching practices, he made some nice plays. And then Hendricks too. You know, Hendricks had some good plays in the spring, but obviously there's a lot of depth at linebacker, so he would have probably been, you know, looking up at a tough proposition, trying to play a ton this year. But you know, some of those guys would have been counted on for depth, but, you know, certainly now they have to try to figure out what to go from here.
Dave, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Of course.
And that is Dave Southern from the Idaho Statesman.
Yeah, getting a little bit more of a detailed look at the process with it. And I think it's at least one of the good things about having him on. It doesn't make it, like, any more pleasant. And it's just good to have a little bit more context surrounding the timeline with everything that happened.
And I'm sure there'll be some more that'll probably come out. It usually does as stories evolve, as more gets said on both sides. The university hasn't commented yet. Except for, you know, a statement about, the university, it was a spokesman, Greg Hahn, said Boise State is committed to thorough and fair investigations into all allegations of sexual misconduct and to holding parties accountable when they are found to be responsible for violating the student conduct of law. But federal privacy laws restrict our ability to comment on any student records or any specific investigations. That's Greg Hahn talking to the Statesman, to Dave Southern last night. So I'm sure there'll be some comments, but again, probably not as much as you would like to hear.
Yeah, and on that note, and I'm sure we'll talk about this a little bit more in the second hour with the Baylor situation, but you want to know why there's a big role for journalism? It's situations like this. Mm-hmm. I mean, as the caller who called earlier on, Ted wanted to make a point, and he's 100% right. This is journalism that brought this to the table. When you look at the Baylor situation, whether I forget that one magazine publication that had the long length feature with Ukuwachu. Mm-hmm. Outside Alliance had a lot about bringing the sexual assault allegations to the surface so people could actually see what was going on. And I know it's fun to rip the media, and I'm not putting myself as a part of the quote journalism that's bringing that up. I'm not tuning my own horn because nothing deserves to be tuned in that situation. But for the people who are on the ground and are doing the reporting, I mean, that there's your role for journalism, and they probably should be commended when, but at least I don't really want anybody should be commended. It's not a situation where anybody should feel like they have to pat themselves on the back.
One thing that strikes me as unique is that the story was brought out by the people who were charged. That side, not the side of the victims that have been over the time usually hushed up like at Baylor, but this story was brought to light by the other side.
Because they feel like they were treated unfairly, which, if anything, is going to keep this in the cycle, it's how were they treated? If we find more facts about how the investigation took place, and do they bring it to the table? What happens from there? And how Boise State handles it from a statement standpoint? Those will be the things moving forward. If this thing stays within the news cycle, it will be because of those reasons.
More on the Baylor situation a little later. Thinking of buying a spa this weekend? Check out Caves and Prater at Snake River Pool and Spa on Orchard near Overland. They'll be there tomorrow. You can also do some research and get details on all of the special pricing for this weekend. Caves and Prater live from Snake River Pool and Spas. That's tomorrow from 3 until 6.
Up next, I'm going to talk about football in maybe a little bit more of a fun way. A couple of publications have come out with a Mountain West preview, and you might be interested to see how many Boise State players make their preseason all-conference teams compared to some of the other squads in the conference. That's next on Sports Radio, 93.1 FM, 1350 AM, The Ticket. And that's where we're hanging out today, DataTel Studios. Chris Lewis, Bob Beeler on the Bob and Chris Show. The Boise State news with the couple of players dismissed and one suspended. We've been talking about that for the first half hour of the show, but it's time to kind of branch out into more of a fun college football discussion. And some more news about the Baylor situation, we'll get to it too. But, you know, football is about a game that's on the field, and sometimes we get lost in all the other things that go around it during the offseason, but a lot of publications are coming out with their conference previews, including the Sporting News with the Mountain West. And there are a couple of things that you notice from what you expect to be Boise State written quite a bit when it comes to the all-conference type of performers in the preseason. And it's no surprise that Brett Rypien was a big person highlighted in the Sporting News.
He's the guy that's featured in the Mountain West preview in both. We've got the Sporting News and we've got Athlon. They're fairly similar in what they project. Both have Boise State and San Diego State winning their respective divisions. They don't come out and bluntly say that one is going to win the playoff, but if you look at the bowl projections, you can tell who they think is going to win. Sporting News has San Diego State going to the Las Vegas Bowl and Boise State going to the Hawaii Bowl. That would mean that San Diego State would have won the championship game. So you can just sort of infer that they think San Diego State's the best team, where Athlon has it pretty much flipped. They have Boise State going to the Las Vegas Bowl, and they have San Diego State playing in the Poinsettia Bowl, which would make you think that Athlon thinks Boise State is the top team. Sporting News only did one all-conference team, Chris, and Boise State only had three players on the all-conference team. San Diego State had the most with five, but again, there were very few selections because they only did one team. Rippon and Spurbeck made it from the offensive side. Tyler Rossa made it from the special teams, the kicker. And nobody was chosen from the defensive side. Athlon had Rippon and Spurbeck on the offensive side, as well as Yaku in the offensive line. Mario Yaku, I believe, a three-year starter for the Broncos up front. And they also had a position that was different. They picked two running backs. Both magazines did. They picked Pumphrey and Brian Hill from Wyoming as the top two running backs. But Athlon on their first team chose an AP, which I guess is an all-purpose player. And they chose McNichols, so I guess a way to get another player onto the first team. Defensively, Athlon only had one Bronco on the first team defense. That was Vallejo. They also chose Rossa on special teams. And then they picked a second team that included Rowe on offense, McCaskill, Weaver, Moxie, and Dylan Sumner-Gardner on defense, which I think if Sporting News had done a second team, they had no Bronco defensive players on the first team, you would have expected two or three guys to show up there.
Yeah, so how does that compare with some of the other teams from the individual standpoint? I believe San Diego State took the cake, especially on a lot of the defensive side, because they do return quite a bit for a unit that was pretty spectacular last year when you look at the end result numbers and what San Diego State was able to hold their opponents to.
So you expect in a lot of the Bronco defense in the line and in the secondary is gone, so you wouldn't expect many there. You might expect a little more love from the linebacking position. Again, Vallejo got on the first team for the Bronco defense on the Athlon publication, Weaver on the second team. Not any mention of Vander Esch, who I think is going to be a coming player. Martirano wasn't mentioned. I think linebacker is probably the deepest and strongest area on the Bronco defense.
Yeah, you can always play the game of which one of the Broncos that are getting none of the preseason attention could be a breakthrough type of performer, because they've had that over the last few years, and all teams have it, because I don't know if you have the Sporting News from last year, the Athlon from last year, the Phil Steele from last year, where they try to do all the projections, and hey, it's fun. It's what we're getting to sports for, is to sort of project ahead and take a guess of who's going to be the impact players for a team that's going to make a run in the conference. But very rarely does it look identical. You're going to have injuries, you're going to have unexpected performers, and you're going to have surprise teams that change what we think, and it changes the all-conference teams, what we have at the end of the year. As I'm sure you know, you'd much rather be on the all-conference team at the end of a season than at the beginning of a season.
The consensus on the Mountain side was Wyoming last, Boise State first, but then kind of a mixed bag. Like the Athlon magazine had Air Force second, Sporting News had Colorado State second, Utah State was picked either third or fifth, New Mexico was picked fourth or fifth, Colorado State again second and fourth. So a lot of discrepancies in what they think between 2 and 5, consensus in the 1 and 6 positions. They also ranked, and I'm speaking of the Sporting News, just some of the kind of the fun rankings. They gave Thomas Spurbeck the best hands. They gave the most elusive running back to Jeremy McNichols. Top NFL prospect to Donnell Pumphrey of San Diego State. Wes Steelhammer from Air Force was the hardest hitter. And they listed best coach as Rocky Long. Coordinator to watch from Boise State, Zach Hill.
You skipped over my favorite one of the rating the Mountain West section.
Right.
Best interview. Come on. Best interview is an important one. You're the media. Tony Sanchez, UNLV's head coach, got the best interview. It says his enthusiasm is infectious, and he always has something to say, good or bad.
Ron Carriger of San Jose State was listed as coach on the hot seat, and the loudest stadium, Albertson Stadium here in Boise.
What is your take on best interview? Do you agree with that?
He's good. I interviewed him twice, both at the Mountain West and prior to the game. Yes, Tony Sanchez is a good interview. He's willing to talk. He's friendly. He engages you. Willing to, you know, gives you some background on his team. He's a very good interview.
There
Bob Davey, New Mexico, is also a very good interview. I'm just looking at some of the other ones that are out there. Probably I would have gone with those two between Davey and Sanchez for the best interview in the Mountain West.
Are you allowed to say who's the worst?
Well, there's a couple that won't do it, so maybe they would fall into that category. When you're asking to do a pregame interview, you generally don't get the time of day from Nevada, so they don't usually do it. And I want to say that maybe there's one other one that won't do it.
Yes.
So
getting you to throw some shade. Bob and Chris Show, Sports Radio The Ticket, on Twitter at Bob and Chris Show, and the commercial tire text line is 208-424-9300. What is your strategy? Because you're going to have to do this if you're selected, I guess, to fill out one of the preseason ballots, not only for first through 12th or however. It's probably they do it by division.
One to six.
But you're going to have to fill out the All-Mountain West preseason team. Now, it's easy to do the metrics for some of the positions, right? Like quarterbacks, you're going to look – let's be honest. You're going to pick Brett Rypien.
Here's the thing. What I first do is I get out the all-conference team from last year.
Okay.
And then I look to see if there maybe was anybody hurt, a la like an Anthony Drimmick the year before that might have been an all-conference player that's back this year. Sometimes that list, maybe a Chucky Keaton the year before. And then you kind of have to weigh, do you think they're going to be back at, you know, where they are? Trying to come up with anybody new that's in the league, either a transfer, unless you've seen them play before, or a freshman, because probably some freshman's going to find their way on either a first or second team all-conference, but who they are, you can't really judge. I find the hardest one to rate is the offensive line, because there's really no stats with the offensive line. And pretty much, if you're a returning all-conference player in the offensive line that the coaches picked at the end of the season, I'm going to defer to you, and I'm going to put those guys on my ballot to start. And then when I run out of those people that were honored last year in the offensive line, then that's when I really start to scrounge and see who might be a three-year starter or something like that on one of the better lines in the league.
I know how serious you take everything that you do, so I'm like surprised that you're not like talking to coaches throughout the conference and be like, okay, I know these three are good because they're voted all-conference, but for these other two linemen, coaches, help me out. Like, who's good in this league? You don't go that in depth.
Well, I just don't think they'd answer the call. I don't think you could call somebody up and pick any school in the league and say, you know what, I'd like to spend 10 minutes with you to talk about who the best players in the league are. I don't think that's happening. You might be able to talk to the coach at your school that you cover on something like that, but you know, why would somebody pick up the phone and talk to me? Or, and I don't mean just me, but you know, if the announcer at Fresno wanted to call Brian Harsin and talk with him for 10 minutes, I doubt that that's something they would do either.
Yeah, you can talk to the coaches within Boise State, though. They're all cool with you. They know what you're about, so they trust you. So I think if you could, if you really wanted to go more in depth. But from the perspective from the outside, I think, how do you pick like a freshman of the year or a newcomer? I don't know. I don't think the Mountain West does that for football.
They did for basketball. They did both.
They do it for both for basketball. And it's like, how in the world are you supposed to project that? Like, it's one thing to project people that you've already seen in a conference, and that's what these publications are doing. Right now we're talking about the Sporting News and Athlon Sports. They have people who watched Boise State and the Mountain West play games last year, so it's one thing to project, hey, you did this in the Mountain West last year. I can expect you to do this next year. But from freshman standpoint, and especially newcomers who are coming from various levels of competition, to be able to say anything with confidence, that seems like it'd be a difficult
task. It probably goes to whatever player has had the most preseason pub switching teams. Or maybe a lot of times it might be the position. You know, if somebody's counting on a quarterback that's transferred in to be really good and they're going to start, they're going to have an impact on that team, so maybe they would be a newcomer of the year coming out as a transfer. I don't think... Is there a quarterback this year that's going to be a grad transfer in the league? I mean, I know Colorado State got the guy from Georgia, Bauta, that was third string at Georgia last year, but I don't think he's projected to win the battle to start at Colorado State. I think Stevens is probably going to be the returning starter at Colorado State. So I think a lot of it's just what you read and, you know, who's talked up from spring ball. That, you know, if somebody at Utah State all of a sudden gets a lot of mentions of what they're doing at spring ball, and they're a transfer, you might want to put them on the list.
All right, what's today's date? It's May 26th. May 26th, 2016. If you had to pick one player in the Mountain West that you're most sure is going to make the postseason all-conference team, any position.
Assuming nobody gets hurt.
Yeah, you got to factor that into the equation, too. I mean, they could get hurt and ruin
that could be anybody that could happen.
Yep.
I would say Brett Rypien.
Brett Rypien
would be the guy I would think most, looking at what quarterbacks are back from the rest of the league. My second choice would probably be Donnell Pumphrey. And the reason I say that on both of them is Boise State is more quarterback-driven. San Diego State is more running back-driven. Teams that are going to win, and I think Boise State and San Diego State are the favorites in each of the conference, in each of the divisions in the conference. So generally, the better teams get more players on the all-conference team. So if you are the best quarterback in the league that plays on the best team, feel pretty strongly that's going to be you, and the same thing with the best running back on a running team. So those would be the two guys I would pick most likely for that. You can meet some of your favorite all-time Boise State football players with Sports Radio The Ticket at Dave & Buster's. That'll be Wednesday, June the 1st from 5 until 7. Boise State will be honoring the best players from the 30 years on the blue. Coming to the event at the Dave & Buster's will be Nick Schleckaway, Lance Sellers, Marty Tadman, Chris Wing, Joe O'Brien, Ryan Winterswijk, Ryan Akibi, Bart Hendricks, Tom DeWitts, and many, many more. Join Caves and Prater. They'll be broadcasting from 3 until 6. I'll be out there starting at 5 as well. That's coming up at Dave & Buster's on Milwaukee on Wednesday.
Up next on the Bobby and Chris Show, it is Quick Hits, including I have a story that really isn't a story.
And who is the latest ESPN announcer that's supposed to be leaving? That's next on the Bob and Chris Show on Sports Radio The Ticket.
93.1 The Ticket presents Quick Hits with Bob and Chris. The topics other shows with Bob and Chris don't miss. Topic number one.
One.
Who is the latest ESPN announcer to get up on out of there?
It seems like it's going to be Heather Cox. Reports say that she's going to be headed to NBC, much like Mike Tirico, that she's going to be joining him on the Thursday night football broadcast. She did NBA, college football, college basketball, and more at ESPN. She's, I think, worked freelance for NBC for the Olympics because they hire a lot of different people because they need so many different venues covered there. I'm sure she'll do something like that, but it looks like Heather Cox is going to be moving to the Peacock.
Wish her the best. Anybody who refs Boise at a national level like that, certainly hope that she kills it at NBC just like she was doing at ESPN.
Topic number two.
Two.
A lot of movement, recruiting in the offseason, transfers as well. How did Nevada basketball get better?
They added a couple of transfers to their basketball team from NC State, Caleb and Cody Martin. Now they're not eligible for this upcoming season, but they'll be there for the 2017-2018 season if nothing goes wrong. Caleb is 6'7", 215 pounds. He had 12 points, 4 boards a game last year, playing significant time for NC State. And Cody is also 6'7", 210 pounds. Not as much of a factor, but still a scorer who can put into double digits if he gets enough minutes. So I'm looking at what Nevada's doing basketball-wise. They're adding high-profile coaches. They did that this offseason from Cal assistant. There was some controversy surrounding, but brought that in. Eric Musselman is building up quite a reputation of being able to win wherever he's at. Like, Nevada basketball, they might be the team, along with San Diego State in this league, they need to look out for the next two or three seasons.
And Nevada, I think, is a team that probably under Musselman with his connections with the NBA, maybe people think he can help him get there. It seems like there's more noise there than there is down at the bottom of the state at UNLV.
Topic number three.
Didn't even mention Dave Rice, also part of that staff as well. Did Boise State find a replacement, speaking of assistant basketball coaches, for Jeff Linder yet?
Well, the Oregonian is reporting that Mike Burns, who had just signed up this offseason to be an assistant at Portland, is going to leave Portland and come to Boise State. Last year, he was the interim coach, took over almost, I think, at the start of the season at the University of Pacific. He has previously been the head coach at Eastern Washington from 2004 to 2007, and he's worked for several head coaches that used to be on the Gonzaga staff with Coach Rice, so there being the connection. But the Oregonian reporting that Mike Burns will take Jeff Linder's spot.
So start the process, Bob, of getting to know a couple of new members on the Boise State basketball coaching staff. Interestingly enough, the other new assistant, Phil Beckner, I was reading a long feature of Sports Illustrated Lee Jenkins, who writes fantastic features for SI, one on Kevin Durant. Like, Kevin Durant, pending free agent, Oklahoma City Thunder. Of course, they're a game away from reaching the NBA Finals. I'm reading that, learning a lot about Kevin Durant, and all of a sudden, Phil Beckner's name comes up. He's name-checked in that story. Basically, Billy Donovan was running a camp, and Beckner was one of the people who was also instructing at that camp that Presti was at, the GM for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Just goes to show you that, you know, Phil Beckner has quite the reputation throughout basketball.
Topic number four.
Chris, what's a story that isn't a story?
This thing about the Raptors being out late in the morning, I guess two mornings ago, the morning before their game against the Cleveland Cavaliers where they got housed yesterday, a report from a Toronto publication said that they saw the Raptors players, Corey Joseph and Damari Carroll, out at just before 2 in the morning at a Cleveland casino, and they clearly were not in game preparation mode. Now, you know from covering minor league baseball and even college athletics, this kind of fits the same thing, where, like, if you're an athlete, your body clock is different than most people. Like, when you get off work from your 9 to 5, you go get dinner or you go get something to eat or drink, and that's kind of how your life goes. But it's just, you look at it from that context. For professional athletes, their work day kind of has to be at peak form at 7 at night, when most people, that's when they're kind of off their peak mode. So when they're done with work, they do stuff like go out to eat, go out to do things, and that just throws off their entire body clock. So you can't look at when they're out, what they're doing when they're out, and necessarily put that same value structure if you were out at 2 in the morning.
Give you an idea. Game at 8:30. Most teams, or at least Boise State, likes to shoot 5 hours before that. It'd be 3:30. And a lot of times you eat before shoot-around, so most of the teams probably don't get up till 2.
Mm-hmm. So that's just how it works. So no shade at the Raptors. They just need to play better to keep me more entertained about this stuff. Baylor, no laughing matter. What's going on there? We discuss that next on The Ticket.
These guys know sports.
Most of the time.
Bob and Chris, the voices of Boise State Athletics. Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
Today was the day the other shoe dropped at Baylor. Reports that Ken Starr was going to be reassigned as he was president and chancellor, and I guess just a chancellor. I don't know what that technically means. At Baylor, it sounds like maybe the president is higher than the chancellor. I've attended a school and worked at another one where one, the president was higher than the chancellor, and the other one, it was in reverse. But Art Briles, head football coach, out at Baylor.
Suspended with intent to terminate. Have you ever heard that before?
I think they're probably trying to fire him with cause so they don't have to buy him out, would be my guess. It's got to be pretty lengthy amount of money left on the contract. And you probably have to go certain steps that you'd have to go through to terminate somebody with cause.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like, technical terms. Like, he's gone. He's out of here. We're not out of here just yet because we can't, but he will be soon. So he's adios.
And that's a guess. Yeah. I have not read that, but that would be my interpretation if you told me that somebody was going to suspend somebody with intent to terminate.
Athletic director sanctioned and placed on probation as well. So you mentioned the other shoe dropped at Baylor for all of the sexual assault allegations that they've had to deal with over the past few years, including Sam Ukwuachu, who was a former Boise State player, transfer over to Baylor. That was one of the things that I don't think it started the ball rolling, because there were other things that came up before the Ukwuachu situation, but that was one of the more high-profile things that put a lot of the other instances at Baylor into context. So with Art Briles, I mean, what he did at Baylor from a football standpoint, unexpected, and results were there. I mean, 65 wins in draft picks out the chain. He was coming up with first-round picks, a couple of top 10 picks as well, when Baylor just didn't have that before Art Briles showed up. So all the success that he had on the field wasn't enough to overcome the culture on their campus when it came to sexual assault. But are you surprised that it still came down to Briles being fired? Because just a couple of weeks ago, it seemed like Briles might be able to get through at Baylor without losing his job, and maybe a couple of people above him would be gone instead of Briles.
I didn't think so.
Okay.
I thought when it was... when all was said and done, I thought there would be more changes, and the football coach knew things. It wasn't one person. It wasn't two. It was a lot. And I think, when you look at where Baylor was going, Baylor had to look at things from the overall university, not just the fact that the football program was doing well. And I was not surprised that Briles was let go. I was kind of surprised that it didn't happen sooner.
All right, so you were on the other side of this. Now, some of the things that came out, the language from the report that came out, directly discouraging some accusers from reporting incidents and retaliated against at least one for reporting sexual assault. That is scary. Like, that statement in itself is scary. When I read that, nobody can have their job who was in administration, who really had any kind of power whatsoever at Baylor. Mm-hmm. Because if you let the situation get to that, where an investigation finds out that, everybody failed, right? Like, you, nobody who was in any kind of position of power there can still be in a position of power. I think that's the first and foremost. Like, that was shocking for me to read.
And you're really kind of surprised that it got to that point. You would have thought that something happens once that you would all of a sudden tighten things up, check to see where things were going, and it wouldn't happen 3, 4, 5 times.
Bruce Feldman, college football reporter, said that the NCAA has contacted Baylor, and Baylor said that they will cooperate with the NCAA. Is this something that the NCAA should be involved with?
They were involved with Penn State.
Should they have really been involved in Penn State? And they actually, at one point, backtracked on some of the punishments that they ended up giving Penn State, and then more information came out about a month ago, which makes you think maybe they shouldn't have backed off of their initial punishment with what they had at Penn State. But people still draw the line between this isn't violating the amateurism or NCAA cheating or, you know, paying players, and those are things that the NCAA has power over.
But the NCAA has rules on a lot of different things, and I think they want to regulate and keep clean the entire spectrum of college sports. So I think the NCAA believes that it can stick its nose into all aspects of college sports. Mike wants to join us on the Fresh Never Frozen Domino's hotline. Mike, welcome to the Bob and Chris Show.
Thanks, boys. Yeah, I was just going to bring up, the cloud of the NCAA getting involved. I mean, if they have to, great. But, you know, that Penn State, I'm trying to search for the best word here. I guess was kind of a really extreme example of something that had gone terribly, terribly wrong at an institution. But I don't know if how deep the NCAA kind of seemed like some bumbling idiots when it came to some of the stuff that they did to Penn State and then pulling it back. And then the whole Jerry Sandusky thing is going to be uncovered for a while. But I don't know why the entire athletic department hasn't been cleaned out. You know, all the football coaches fired, because from what I gathered read on Twitter, is that it just wasn't Art Briles, but there were coaches who were and administrators within the football program and the athletic department that were taking, you know, quote unquote, taking care of these things. So I don't think anybody that had anything to do, maybe not the equipment manager or whatever, but you know, anybody in a coaching position at Baylor should remain at that school.
If you read also some of the other accounts, Mike, it talks about how the police department didn't investigate things. The police department seems like they're right there with them. They brushed a lot of stuff under the rug.
Oh, of course, and we all know that the lawsuits are coming, mm-hmm. and I hope that the Waco Police Department, or you know, I'm sure Waco's big enough city to have their own police department, they hire an outside investigator to investigate all this stuff and corroborate everything that was, you know, that was put in the papers about these guys burying files or hiding files or, you know, redacting names, even though they shouldn't be redacted because it's public information and things like that. I mean, yeah, this isn't handing money out at SMU by the truckloads, but this is pretty bad.
Now, Mike, before I let you continue here, let me ask you this question, because you're mentioning all the big, you know, theme things that happen in Waco and happen with Baylor. Now, a question to you, you're a huge sports fan. At any point, do you feel guilty in this? Like, man, I'm watching all this college football. I'm part of the problem of making this such a big institution that they could get away with something like this. Like, does any part of you feel guilty?
Yeah, well, it does, especially in the light of, you know, the three kids, the three, you know, former football players at Boise State getting punished. For you know what they did, you know that, you know is that, you know, what's the sign of being a big time football program? Is it, you know, winning a major bowl game? Is it going on probation? Is it, you know, having things like this, you know, dug up or what? You know, it's, you know, I feel it's yeah, it does make me go, you know, what the hell is going on with college athletics? Mm-hmm. Not just college football, but college athletics. Because, I mean, geez, was it 5 years ago where the former Baylor basketball coach was covering up why one of his players was killed?
It was longer ago than that, but yes,
was
Baylor.
Okay, I have it, but I mean that was terrible. You know, he says, "Oh yeah, the guy was into drugs," and it couldn't have been further from the truth.
It takes some self reflection at a certain point. It really does. Mike, we appreciate the call. Thanks for joining the Bob and Chris Show. Lisa, phone line's open for you 424-9300 on the Fresh Never Frozen Domino's line. And it's just like, you know, this is football off season, so there's very rarely like something that is fantastic that comes out of the off season from a positive football standpoint. We just had, was it the Bills GM talk about, like, this isn't safe for humans to play when it comes to NFL football. Like, humans weren't built to do this. Like, at any point, like, what needs to happen for you personally? And the answer could be different for you, Bob Beeler, mm-hmm. for Joe in the car listening, for Todd across the glass, for JP, Jeff, and Mike here at KTIK. Like, this is a culture where they sexual assault was a part of the culture at Baylor. At least they wanted to prevent people from reporting it. The NFL is out here hiding information about concussions. Like, at a certain point, like, where's the line? Like, how much more needs to happen before we are like, all right, I can't deal with this anymore? But are we just going to keep watching no matter what on Saturdays and Sundays for football? And the answer for me is I'm going to keep watching. And does that make me a bad person? Does that make me part of the problem that they can get away with doing whatever they want? I'm still going to be on my couch watching, and I'm still going to be on the air talking about it mm-hmm. every weekend.
It seems like it hasn't hurt the attendance. Hasn't hurt the ratings. I mean, I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm just making a statement of fact.
So as long as you keep consuming the product, it's only going to get bigger. Why would they change? Like, doesn't something
I think that, obviously, if you're running the shows, you don't want to have any of this happen. The league doesn't want it. Baylor doesn't want it. Boise State doesn't want it. The NCAA doesn't want it. Nobody wants something when there's a black eye, things that are bad that are happening.
But they darn sure want to be good at football.
Mm-hmm.
So at what cost?
Right.
You know, Baylor was irrelevant when it came to college football for the longest time. They got good. They enjoyed their time, and they did everything they could to protect it, because what happens when you have a really good football team, because so many people care about it, that you'll do anything to prevent that great football team from falling back to being average. So I might be part of the problem. You might be part of the problem. But I think we're still going to be watching football.
And if you're interested in watching football this season, Boise State is having their select a seat today. Caves and Prater will be broadcasting live from 3 until 6. You can view, sit in, select, and purchase season tickets for the year while testing the views from the available locations. Just enter Albertson Stadium through the Alanoba Hall of Fame Gallery and look for Caves and Prater. Go on the blue and you can kick some field goals, take pictures with Buster Bronco and members of the Boise State Spirit Squad. That's all coming up today at 3 o'clock.
Up next on the Bob and Chris Show, with the select the seat going on for Boise State. If Albertson Stadium was wide open for you, open seating, and you were the first one in, which seat would you pick to watch a Boise State football game? That's next on the Bobby Chris Show on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
You're on Facebook anyway, right? Search Sports Radio, The Ticket for videos, stories, poll questions, and more from the DataTel Studios. This is Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis, DataTel Studios, Bob and Chris Show. One more thing about the Baylor situation, what's going on with Art Briles being dismissed. Whoa, what was that? Apparently we have a call on the line who didn't want to wait until I introduced them. So before I get my final point on Baylor, let's just get to Mel on the Fresh Never Frozen Domino's line at 424-9300. Mel, thanks for joining the Bob and Chris Show.
Hey, guys. I just want to talk to you a little bit about these athletes that feel like they're entitled to everything in the world. When I was a kid, I'm in my 50s now, but when I was a kid, I would consume sports just voraciously. It didn't matter who was playing. If it was on TV, I mean, I was watching, and you know, now in terms of the pro sports, I'm a Packers fan and a San Francisco Giants fan, and I will watch their games when they're on TV, but I won't just watch a game just to watch a game. I remember back when Latrell Sprewell was holding out. I think it was late 90s.
Needed to feed his family.
Yeah, he said he was making $16 million a year, and somebody asked him, you know, why are you holding out? And he goes, because I have to be able to put food on the table. And I'm thinking to myself, I won't even see $16 million in my lifetime, and this guy is complaining about not being able to feed his family. And that's when I kind of got off the pro sports thing and just started watching my own, you know, my favorite teams. But
how does that tie to Baylor?
What's that?
How does that tie to Baylor for you?
Well, you know, you had a caller on. You asked him, you know, if we are, you know, kind of feeding that culture, and you know, when I was younger, I admitted I was feeding the heck out of that culture. And now, it's like, you know, I watch Boise State because I bleed orange and blue, and I'll watch that regardless. But I also feel like, you know, the more that we consume that type of product, the more that kind of stuff is going to happen. If we just refuse to consume it, and there wasn't anybody in the stands, there wasn't people buying jerseys and all that crap, they'd be forced to go the way of the dinosaur.
Yeah, but then there'd be a lot of the other positive things about sports that are lost if you go the extreme the other way. So I don't know if there's a great answer to this, and that's the problem.
Well, it's just like, you know, when you have to discipline your children.
Yeah.
You know, you approve of the things that they do good, but when they do something bad, you have to discipline them. And it seems like they're more likely to do the good things when you're fair and willing to discipline than, you know, when you're not, because then they just feel like they can get away with anything they want to get away with. So I really think that the only way to curb this bad behavior is just to stay away.
Thanks, Mel. We appreciate it.
Sure.
I mean, is there a line that you would cross for you? I mean, is there a line for you personally, Bob? I know you haven't brought it up. For me, I said, like, I'm going to watch regardless, mm-hmm. and I might feel bad about it at a certain point. And again, this is trying to relate it to Baylor and the fact that, like, people will do anything to protect their football institution because there's people who care about it so much, and there's so much money to be made with having a powerful football program because there are people like us who are sitting there watching every Saturday and Sunday. Could it ever get to a point where it's like, for you personally, enough of this? I can't take it anymore.
I would hope so. I would hope that if things got really way, way, way out of hand, mm-hmm. that I would say something like that, that it would bother me enough. I don't know. I mean, obviously, I'm making a living at covering sports, so I'd have to change what I do and move in a total different direction, not only for my vocation, but just for who I am and what my lifestyle is. But I would hope that there would be some point. I hope everybody would have something at their point where whatever they were doing, they would change and do something else if something got to that point. We've got a text in on the commercial tire text line. We're talking about Baylor and the whole society and how things have sort of come to evolve is what Chris and I were talking about all these problems that are happening on some of these campuses. It's capitalistic culture. To the winner goes all the spoils. It's terrible and disrespect of women. It's one of the worst qualities that us men in general and as a society have yet to fully deal with.
Hey, it's spot on. That's a good comment. Who was that?
No name. Sorry, I can't give credit.
So it's a pretty good text there, and I agree with a large part of it that, you know, sometimes, not even sometimes, like, we as men have to kind of sit down and look at as a society a lot of the times how we treat women, not only in just a sports context. And I hate to just make it sports, but that's what we're dealing with here because it's sports teams and sports issues that are combining with societal issues.
Postal Grandpa with a tweet to the Bob and Chris Show. You can tweet us at Bob and Chris Show. If we stay away, would it get better? How do you explain Duke lacrosse? Entitled athletes, yes, but my fandom is not a cause.
Good point. Although, I mean, Duke lacrosse is kind of major in that area. Like, they were a big deal.
And Duke lacrosse was not guilty of what they were charged.
Yeah.
They were guilty of a lot of things, thinking they were entitled, not treating people well, having parties that got out of hand. I mean, they had a lot of problems with Duke lacrosse. Did they rape somebody? The answer to that was no.
Yeah, and we all jumped to conclusions before getting a lot of facts, which is always the default case the other way. Like, you got to be careful before you get all outraged and jump on your soapbox, because it could be a situation like Duke lacrosse. I get it. One of the other things that came out of this Baylor thing, and people who listen to this show know I'm usually like really pro student athlete when it comes to a lot of things. However, I do not like how a lot of the Baylor players on their social media page handled this by basically trying to turn themselves into the victim. You're like, how dare they get rid of a coach? Everybody's against us, kind of thing. Like, that was a very poor look. I do not like how a lot of the Baylor players, and they're, again, young people, emotional, but they should have had something in place where you cannot, do not tweet for 24 hours after this thing comes out. 48, give yourself a week before you mention anything on social media regarding this, because there's too much emotion for you built up to send out a logical tweet. And a lot of them, I thought, came across looking very poorly, like they were the victim. Thankfully, the football players are the farthest thing from the victim out of everything that happened at Baylor. So I kind of cringed when I was reading some of those.
And I think from reading things, the players are on break right now. Semester is finished. Summer probably hasn't started yet. It said they were texted that Briles was out.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got 100 people that are basically on their own. And I guess, you know, it is free speech. I mean, you could have a team meeting and somebody in the athletic department, I don't know who that would be, maybe the athletic director, even though he's on probation, would say, you know, people are going to be watching how we react to things. You think about what you say or what you tweet or what you do. But if everybody is scattered to wherever they live at home, there's no team that's together that you can encourage.
How do you deliver the message?
You don't. You'd have to do it the same way with a text, right? Or call everybody up individually, which probably would probably take too long.
Yeah, and I'm not one for social media bans. Like, some coaches say, well, players can't tweet anyway. This is why I have the social media ban in place, so we don't – I mean, these players will have to deal with looking like – I don't want to use too strong, but looking foolish for – the next couple of days or week or forever, ever long it lasts. But that's also a lesson in itself. So that's why I don't think that the social media ban, let's take away their Instagram and Twitter pages, that's not letting them grow up.
No, but I think maybe what you're saying is to kind of quote, what is it, Herm Edwards, don't press send.
Yeah.
Look at what you are going to write. Look at what you're going to post. Look at what you're going to say and think about it. Don't just, and I think this maybe goes to anything when you're upset. Make sure what you want to put out there is something that you'd like to have put out there 24, 48, a week, a month, or whatever. Our texter replies with another comment back to us again. Wish we had a first name. If you text into us, we would appreciate it if you could give us a name that we could refer to different people, give you credit for what we mentioned on our commercial tire text line. Too much money in college sports. I have a pretty good solution. How about 50% of all the profits made from all the corporate sponsorships and bowl games and such, and all that 50% goes to non-athletic specific scholarships?
I don't know how it's – I mean, athletics helps – so it does help a large part of the university beyond just athletics too. I don't know numbers specific, money, and how it's divided, but you can't deny how an athletic program, when everything is – on the up and up, and you don't have a situation like what's going on at Baylor, there are a lot of good things that come from athletic programs too. So you don't want to just completely this is a day where people are slamming athletics, and I get it. But there are also a lot of good things that come with it. It might not be the day to even mention those.
But I think
the 50%, I just don't know.
First of all, a lot of athletic programs don't make money. A lot of them lose money. But the other thing is there's so much money being reinvested into athletics. Knew this, knew that, bigger this, bigger that, that, you know, the costs are going up, 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 and it's forcing universities to raise all kinds of money through tickets. I saw in an email that the University of Georgia is raising donations for what you have to have, sort of like a PSL or a BAA donation, by 20% for the coming season. And the numbers of what they charge aren't cheap to begin with. So, and in the same token, that I guess it came out of the budget meeting, it said the athletic budget for the whole school would be $123 million this year.
Structure of college athletics, man. I mean, I just think this will be, when something drastically changes, there will be conversation about that change. But until something changes, it will be one of the main talking points.
We're going to give you a chance to win the Big Judd's Burgers right now. Two Big Judd's specials. It's a world-famous one-pound burger. Comes with cheddar cheese, large fry, and a drink. Big Judd's, located in Boise off Protest Hill near Boise Avenue, and now open in Meridian on Overland and Eagle Road. 424-9300 the number. Go. Caller number 9 wins.
And up next on the Bob and Chris Show, I know we didn't talk about the Albertson Stadium, where you'd want to sit. We'll get to that coming up next. And if you have an opinion of where you would want to sit, if you walked into an empty Albertson Stadium and could pick your own seat for a Boise State football game, let us know on Twitter at Bob and Chris Show and a commercial tire text line 208-424-9300. That's next on Sports Radio 93.1 FM, 1350 AM. The Ticket.
Caves and Prater will be out at Albertson Stadium coming up at 3 o'clock today. It is Select a Seat Open House. You get a chance to look at what seats are open for the coming season. Kind of test out the view. Decide if you want to be high, you want to be low, you want to be in the sun, you want to be in the shade. And the places that are open, Chris, are marked. And it gives you a chance to kind of see what's out there.
I was trying to understand this. I mean, I'm never in the position where I can afford season tickets for anything. So I've never been in that exclusive club. So you're explaining this event to me. So it's like a, kind of a free-for-all, right? People walking around, testing out the seats, seeing if they like the spot, if they like to be a little bit higher, lower, closer. And I mean, the tickets are still, I guess, more expensive the closer you get. It still works like that. But
sure.
That kind of sounds fun. Like, yeah. That seems interesting to me.
I'm thinking different sports, you sit different places.
Yeah.
Like, for football, I'd rather sit high than low. And maybe some of it's just the view that I've had for 30-plus years calling games. You're usually high and you're usually in the middle of the field. But when I'm in the stands, I'd rather be a little high. I don't want to be the very, very high. I was the last row one year at a Gator Bowl, and we felt like we were, you know, way, way high. Higher than lower, but you get a different view if you're on the sides and if you're in the end. If you're in the end zone, you can see the blocking develop, and you can see holes open and holes close, and that happens quickly. The negatives for sitting in the end zone, a lot of times after a play is over, you don't quite know how many yards somebody made.
Yeah, I mean, I could see the advantage. Like, you're calling a game versus just enjoying it as a fan. I'm guessing there's different spots that you would want to be for each individual situation. So when you're watching football as a fan, I think there would be some advantages to watching it from like the all 22 angle.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't call it. It's rough to call a game from that angle, but if you want to watch it from more of a coaching perspective, or if that's your thing, I think there would be an advantage to the high behind the, but you can't rotate with the action. Like, if it's going one way, you can't like change your seat, reverse the stadium, and now make your seat the same perspective when it's going the opposite direction.
We've got some tweets in on this. Dave from Desert Dave says he likes to be on the west side, which means that's the side of the stadium with the Stickle Sky Center behind you, so you're not looking into the sun. 50-yard line, bottom of the upper deck, right in the middle. Second place for him is the top of the north end zone.
So
I can see the thing about Boise State's Albertson Stadium that's different about other stadiums, the lower level here is very small compared to the upper deck. The upper deck is a lot bigger, where most it's the opposite. The lower deck's usually bigger and the upper deck's a little smaller. But I think those seats right out in front in the upper deck, you've got the height to be over the bench, you've got some perspective, and then if you're in the front row, as he says, nobody's blocking you.
Like Dave's answer is because it just highlights the 50-yard line for the perfect side-by-side view, and then an end zone for the perfect, I guess, up and down view, the best way the action kind of goes up and down from your perspective?
The thing about sitting at the 50-yard line, you're in the middle, and most of the action during the game takes place in the middle, and you're close enough to either end that you've got a pretty good look. I've been to some games where I've sat in the stands and have had seats on, say, the 10-yard line, the 5-yard line, near the goal line. If all the action's at your end of the field during the game, and sometimes that happens, your seat on the 10 or the 15-yard line is going to be a better seat than the seat at the 50.
Mm-hmm.
But if, for example, if the other end of the field has all the action, you feel like you're miles away.
Yeah, I have a perfect story about that. The Fiesta Bowl in 2007, I was sitting on the opposite 10-yard line, and when Ian Johnson scored that 2-point conversion, I had no idea what had happened until you see it on the Jumbotron. I mean, everyone on the other end of the stadium's celebrating, and it's like, what's going on? You have to wait for the replay, and then you're, oh, okay, we won. So, yeah, that makes it hard when you're on one end when things are happening on the other end.
That makes a lot of sense. I could tell you guys a secret here. Like, I can count the amount of football games that I've been to in the stands on, like, one hand. Like, I guess college when I was a student is one thing, but you're, like, in a student section, so you really have no impact on where exactly you're going to be. It's just where the student section is. But when it comes to, like, pro football and college football that I've, like, you know, bought a ticket for, maybe, like, 3, maybe. Like, I've been in a press box for, like, 90% of the football games that I've ever seen. And Albertson Stadium? I've never even walked in the stands at Albertson Stadium. I need to do that. That's probably part of the reason why I like this Select the Seat event, is because you get to walk the stands at Albertson Stadium. I've never been able to do that. So I have probably the worst perspective that anybody could ever have to answer the question that we put out there is, what's your favorite spot to watch a football game at Albertson Stadium? For me, there's only one answer, and that's the press box, because that's the only one that I've actually been to. So, you know, I'm not a fan of the cold weather, so I kind of like the press box on a lot of occasions, but I've never had the perspective of, let's say, first, second, third row as the action's coming right at you, is, you know, Grant Hedrick or Brett Rippon's winding up to throw a pass and Tom Sperbeck is running a seam route right at you. I never had that perspective.
Murph, who used to be on this show with me, says he wants my seat. I'm not giving it up.
What's that, going for your job? He's watched games at a booth with you before. He knows that seat's good.
Yeah, he did stats for us at Virginia last year.
So he knows how valuable that seat is. That's the other good part about being in your booth. You get the Bob Beeler perspective, and you get to see it up close and personal. Like most people who are hearing your call, unless you're bringing the radio to Albertson Stadium, you're not necessarily seeing the action at the same time. So I think my favorite, to answer the question, it all comes down to a simple answer of, I think my favorite way to view a football game would be medium depth at a stadium towards the 50-yard line, because I want to be high enough to see a good amount of the field, and I want to be centered so I could have an equal view of each side.
Can I throw one more thing in that I've just thought of now that to me would score for seats? Who you're sitting with. That if the three of us are going to go to a game, we're going to have a good time. But sometimes if you have people around you that are either very congenial or fun or are kind of a pain in the ass, I think that can change your opinion of where you're sitting, right? I mean, wouldn't you want to sit with people you're going to enjoy being with at the game? You're laughing, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun because, like, I'm imagining the Select the Seat.
Oh, you might not know who your neighbors are going
to
be.
I'm just anticipating, like, we need to simulate it. We need to bring the entire crowd there. Do you like these people? Because they will be who you're next to for most of these games.
But I think it's like getting a group together. I'll bet you there are people out there at Boise State that have sat with each other and sat at the same sections for 10, for 15, for 20 years. And they don't want to move because they enjoy associating with who's next to them.
That is a very good point. I think that adds a lot to the experience. And that's part of the thing. I don't know who sits where. I don't know the more rowdy sections at Albertson Stadium being in the stands. I don't know the sections that are maybe more calm. And we had the debate on, like, for people who stand most of the game versus the people who are sitting who want the other people in front of them to sit, because I don't want to have to stand the entire game because you're standing the entire game. So I'm guessing that kind of politicking also matters from where you're sitting.
Usually in college sports when I've gone, there are certain sections for the visiting team and the rest of them go to the home. But when I've gone to some pro, and I've been to a lot of baseball games, your seats that you go at are kind of random. So if you're on the road, if you're a Giants fan in Chicago or New York or Phoenix or wherever you are, you're going to sit wherever you sit. And your experience at the visiting park goes a long way with who's sitting either behind you, in front of you, or next to you. Last year, Teresa and I went to Chicago. And for those of you that remember the Superfan skit on Saturday Night Live from Chicago, the three guys that were season ticket holders that sat behind us had been going to the games since I think it was either the late 50s or the early 60s. They were the Superfans, down to the Chicago accent. They made our experience that Saturday afternoon at Wrigley Field even better.
They enhanced it. But there could be somebody else who's out of town and wants to see a game and doesn't want anything to do with the Chicago ultimate experience of having the super fans right next to you. So it's all a matter of personal preference. I get it. So I gave you my football answer. Basketball, I think it's actually more valuable to be at the front row. Like, I actually think, like,
you want to be with Jack Nicholson.
If you had to pick like one sport, and I guess hockey might be that too. Although
I've sat in the first row behind a bench in an NHL game. No. The only thing that was fascinating was seeing how the players slid from one end of the bench to the other to rotate the lines in, but you did not have a good seat of what was happening. I like to sit a little higher, and I actually like sitting behind the goal at hockey because you can see the players come and the formations and how they pass. I think if you asked me to sit, I would sit behind the goal at a hockey game.
It's kind of like when you're playing NHL, the video game, they have it from that view, so you can actually see how the team lines up that way.
You can join Sports Radio The Ticket live from the Blue and Orange store in the Boise Town Square Mall. That'll be Tuesday and Friday next week for both the Bob and Chris Show and Idaho Sports Talk with Caves and Prater. So it's a five-hour extravaganza from 1 until 6. Get your photo taken with the 2007 Fiesta Bowl trophy. Check out the all-star list of Bronco greats appearing for free autographs and get $10 Bronco gear select items at 2006 rollback pricing. Big discounts from wall to wall, so join all of us on Tuesday at the Blue and Orange store.
Up next on the Bob and Chris Show, it is What's on Our Radar, and is the Warrior season coming to an end today? That's next on Sports Radio 93.1 FM, 1350 AM, The Ticket.
Time for What's on Our Radar, Bob and Chris Show. Winding down in the conference finals in both the NHL and the NBA, San Jose won last night. Tonight we got a game 7. Pittsburgh hosting Tampa Bay.
Who's going to win?
Ooh, I think Pittsburgh's going to win at home. Although I don't think hockey is as big a home ice advantage in a game 7 as basketball would be.
Well, yeah, anything in life is as automatic as an NBA team winning a game 7 at home. It just seems like it's death taxes and pick the home team in a game 7. In the NBA, you said before the series started in the NHL that the Penguins were better.
I thought they were better. But they've had some issues in goaltending. They're back to Murray, the young kid now. We'll see. Tampa's got – I mean, it's gone 7 games. The games have been tight.
You know what? It still, puzzles me. Didn't the Blues have to go through a thing where they were switching goaltenders too?
The starting goalie for Tampa is hurt. It was Tampa's goalie that's been out. Maybe the Blues have had some issues with goaltenders, too. The Sharks have played the same guy, Jones.
But the crazy thing about it is, what other sport do they really make those kind of big lineup decisions in the middle of the playoffs like that? Like, you're not changing quarterbacks in the playoffs just because, like, you had one quarterback had a bad game. Like, your quarterback's your quarterback at that point.
Assuming you played one guy the whole season. Yeah.
I guess
they'll do it all the time. I mean, the Devils one year fired their head coach after the last regular season game, and they won the Stanley Cup. Sharks, by the way, fired their coach. This is a first-year coach for the Sharks.
and they're in the Stanley Cup final, and they looked pretty good against the Blues from what I saw. And I actually saw most of that or more of that game yesterday than I saw the NBA game.
Boy, stop the presses on that, that you'd be watching more of the Sharks and the Cavaliers.
I was upset. I was mad that the Raptors didn't show up yesterday at the NBA. I'm like, dude, man, I'm watching all this pregame. I'm hyped. I'm like, all right, let's see LeBron legacy game as he come through. And I'm like, Dad, this thing's over in a quarter and a half. There's nothing else to watch. I'm mad. So I was mad at the NBA. So I decided to watch the last game yesterday, that series in San Jose. Congratulations. They're in the Stanley Cup final. So it moves us to the NBA game today while we have just a little bit of time. Golden State, Oklahoma City, their game number 5, 3-1, OKC in front, 7 o'clock start time. I said yesterday, I don't think this series is as over as people want it to be. Maybe we'll get a close game, and that's how Golden State can get a win, but they're at home. They've won 73 games this year. I know they lost once at home to Oklahoma City already, but I have to think the way the NBA works, the pace and space three-point era, there's a lot that fosters these blowouts because more possessions, and if one team's on, one team's not, it'll get out of hand faster. I just don't think that it'll happen in this game. I think the Warriors will win, and then it's all of a sudden game 6.
All right, so here I want to ask you quick answers on these questions from me about Golden State, gotcha. Oklahoma City. Percentage tonight that you think Golden State wins?
55.
Percentage if Golden State wins if they win game 6?
Around 40.
And then if they get to game 7, what would you say?
99, because they're a home team in a game 7. This is the way it works.
Tomorrow we're going to have a show, second hour baseball. Bob Carpenter will join us from Washington. How good are the Nationals? We're going to talk about who are the good teams in baseball this year at the quarter of the way through the season. Caves and Prater next.
The Ticket.